Hey, Bat Family, it's Inkiru here. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If this is your first time listening, thank you so much and welcome to the Bat Family. If you're a returning listener, you know I love you dearly and I appreciate your ongoing support. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform as well as on our YouTube. It's free. And if you'd like to support our podcast financially with a one-time or monthly contribution of a dollar or more, please visit anchor.fm/BLDG Africa's Future/support. You can also find more details about that and more in our show notes or by following our Instagram page at Building Africa's Future, BUILDING Africa's Future. As usual, I invite you to join the conversation and you can start by sharing this episode and our podcast with anyone that you think might enjoy it. Thank you so much once again, and happy listening. Thank you all to our panelists who are here, as well as all of our viewers. We thank you for tuning into this special presentation tonight on parenting in the diaspora, where we'll be attempting to answer the question of whether or not our parents had it right in the way they brought us up, and how we are doing things differently for those of us who are parents or intending parents. As usual, I'm your host, your sister, and your friend, Inkiru, of Conversations from the Diaspora, Building Africa's Future podcast, and I'll be moderating this discussion presented by the Afro-American Academy. So once again, we would like to invite all of our viewers, as well as our panelists, to comment in the chat where they're watching from, where they're tuned in from, and also, if you could please like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channels, we'd really appreciate you all's participation in tonight's discussion. So, before we begin our main conversation, I would like to start by asking our panelists just to let us know where you're from and who lives in you.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining. My name is Curtis Barbre. I am from West Africa, Liberia. A lot of my family are from Sierra Leone and Ghana. And the Kru people and Sapo people live within me.
Hello, everyone. I am Nina, West Africa, Nigeria. I am also a descendant of the Igbo people. I am proudly Imo. And so I would say that the Igbo tradition lives in me.
Hi, I'm Marla Solomon again. My mom's side is African American, and my dad's side is Nigerian, from Cross River, although I live most of my life in Lagos. So I have a lot of different, those are the different things I live in.
Hi, my name is Uzumaka. I go by Amaka. I live in Dallas, Texas, and I originally used to live in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I live with my husband and my two children.
So let's talk a little bit about the childhood. So I think for many of us growing up on Saturday mornings, you didn't sleep past 8 a.m. Otherwise, you're considered a lazy child. You had to be up cleaning or studying. Like, you just didn't have a real childhood. And also being compared to your age mates and all these other things. So I think for us too, I think a lot of you can kind of relate to this as well. Our parents just tell us how far they used to walk from their village or from their hometown to school. I remember my mom saying, like, they used to, like, put, like, a box of books on their head, just kind of to let us know every chance they got, how easy our lives were compared to theirs. So I don't know if any of you can kind of maybe chime in. What are some things that you remember from your childhood? Fond memories, some, you know, funny things like that.
I remember this idea of perfection, especially from my mother. It was like there was no such thing as her messing up. There was no such thing as her being a disobedient child. There was no such thing as her not knowing. So I think that those type of things, as much as this perfect picture that our parents paint for us, it can also affect us in relating with our parents or understanding that, you know, us messing up at our respective ages is normal and not feeling like, oh my God, we failed or any of that.
Yeah, thanks, Amaka. That's very true. Anyone else have any feedback?
Yeah, doubling back on what Amaka said, it's very, very funny because now that I'm raising kids here and I have those conversations of it's okay that you weren't the best, you know, as long as you put in your best. And it makes me laugh because that my parents were, the person who was first does not have two heads, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And it wasn't even a calm, kind conversation. I mean, I didn't get an F, probably got a B or something. And it's an aggressive, how dare you, you know? So yeah, doubling back on that, growing up thinking you had to be perfect was, I want to say, a lot of pressure on us, you know? And even if men, you know, have that, but even for the woman, we had a lot of expectations. You have to be this, you can't go out, you can't be seen in public, you know, things like that. It's I'm glad that things are transitioning now, and hopefully yeah,
yes, God forbid you're an Ada.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, the first daughter experience is always man, even till today. Curtis, what about you?
I guess another part for me was adding on to the idea of perfection is not letting other people know if you're in need of anything. So like if you're feeling a type of way, or, you know, you're in need for, you know, food, anything like that, you can't say that to even your other family members that don't live in a house, in the household. So you have to give that idea that you're always doing fine. Everything is good. You know, when you go out, you wear your best. Things of that nature. So that idea of perfection seep really deep, and, you know, not being your authentic self when you wanted to.
Can't bring shame to the family name.
How dare you?
All right, so I just wanted us to kind of watch this clip really quickly before we kind of go into the next section.
Growing up as an Asian American, I wore the they were so harsh, right? Now that I have my own kid, one second. Kira, sweetie, can you please get mommy the pin on the counter? Thank you so much. I want to do things differently.
Here you go, mommy.
Oh, thank you, sweetie. Oh, your left hand? You're giving mommy something with your left hand, sweetie?
Yeah.
Thank you, you are mad. Like, giving me something with your left hand. Am I your mate? Your BH, you are ashamed of yourself.
I'm only 7 years old.
If I deal with you this evening, don't enter your eye. Rubbish. All you know how to do is do your mouth like snake. So you get out of my face, just lizard.
Oh my goodness. I knew I should have not had all that gluten earlier. Thank you so much, sweetie. Mommy loves you, okay?
So she's actually one of my favorite content creators right now because she just embodies this African mom, African auntie, you know, just things we grew up seeing. So kind of going back to the fond memories from childhood, I think for me, I don't know if this is really a fond memory, but just kind of my lived experience. We didn't go out as much, mostly kind of went to maybe a library or church, which kind of explains why I'm socially, you know, awkward now. I don't like to go out. I pretty much stay at home. So I think, Amaka, you hinted at this earlier, just kind of this experience of, you know, us not really engaging so much or not being able to relate maybe to our parents in a certain way just because of the way we were brought up, you know, as it relates to that parenting style questions, which is on the screen. So if you all kind of respond to that. But I would say one thing that I enjoyed or that I remember growing up was the functions, like the parties, which of course never started on time, being out late, super late at night, going to a party that's supposed to start at 7, doesn't start till midnight, food is cold, lots of memories like that. But I will say from the immigrant experience, and I know a lot of us, again, we can relate to that because our parents, you know, were working so hard. So they didn't, I feel like maybe they didn't always have much time to like spend with us in a way that was meaningful, you know, as maybe intentionally spending time with us. So with this question, you know, about the parenting style, I would love for you all to kind of tell me if this was your experience as well, and what are some things that you're doing differently with your kids?
So for me, I feel like one of the biggest differences personally would be physical touch with parents, particularly. Growing up, there was not a lot of hugging and touching. Physical touch was weird. So you don't hold hands, you don't hug on your kids. I'm an only girl. So I was my dad's favorite, quote unquote, but he would show his love through maybe giving me his meat. You know, when he's eating, I'll be the choice. when he's eating, you want me to sit there. But there was never any daddy's home, hug, give me a peck, things like that. But now our kids, with my kids, there's a lot of physical affection. So I get to hug on them. They don't think it's weird to hug mommy or to get a peck from mommy. And my husband, he plays with them. I see all that. I had one friend whose dad used to do that. And we used to think, oh my God, this is so weird, you know, because my dad, once he comes home, everyone disappears, you know, and then this dad comes home and they run and they hug him. And it was so weird to me. So maybe there were a few people that had that experience. Maybe one of you did, but I definitely didn't. Growing up, physical touch was weird. Even with my mom, there was no all of that. You know, they would show you love through providing and giving you directives and telling you, you know, yamada, you know, that kind of thing. About it.
Curtis.
For me, I think it would be just like making my own tradition and ideologies around my culture of what I want within my household beyond like just African culture. Like in the video, she talked about how he's giving me something with your left hand. And for a lot of us growing up, I don't know where you're all from, but for me, I grew up in America, but, you know, my parents were the one that came here. And so I grew up in that Liberian culture, but I didn't know much about it. And they don't take time to sit you down and be like, hey, this is what we do in Liberia. It's more like if you do something wrong, then they correct you in this, you know, kind of rude manner abruptly. So for me, it's more about taking time to actually sit down and, you know, talk to my son. Is still young, so for right. He's only about to be two. So taking time to say, you know, I love you. I understand why you did that. It's okay to cry, things of that nature, to really soften my touch in a way with the way I use my words around him.
That's deep. Amaka, did you have something to say?
Yes, I would like to add to what everyone has stated prior to me. One thing is apologizing to my kids. Mm. I want to be very intentional. So things that I didn't like in my childhood, I want to definitely, with the guidance of God, correct it, right? Correct it and not overcorrect it, because there are some things that our parents did do for us that made us who we are. So it's taking the time to evaluate what was good and what was not good and what was intentionally done in hopes that it would be good, that we can probably redirect or do it a different way. Another thing would be apologizing to my children. I think learning to apologize to children also teaches a child that their feelings matter and that they're validated, and that just because you're an adult, it doesn't give you the right to just violate them in whatever way, especially if you were wrong.
Right.
I think when you set that precedence in your own home, then when they go out into the world, they know boundaries, they know respect, and they don't know and it's not respect as in like bowing down to someone, but knowing how to maintain self-respect so no one just, you know, takes advantage of that. Also, I wanted to point out that I want to allow my children to express their feelings. Whenever they express it in a way that may not be the best, teaching them how to express it in a better way that would be received in the world.
That's deep. So just to kind of refer back to the video, I wonder if you all kind of feel the same way, you know, being that we, you know, were brought up in our, you know, cultural kind of social environments, as well as an American kind of upbringing as well. So you saw how like the mom, like she kind of had to like split between herself, like trying to be this intentional mom. And then, you know, when the daughter did something that was a little bit like, okay, like it kind of brought back certain, like, you can't do that. So how would you, or how do you like try to find, I guess, a balance? And, you know, I put it on the screen as well. How do you feel about like, you know, beatings and stuff like that, which of course is on extreme side, but like, how have you kind of gone around that? If anyone cares to, if, you know, if that's something that you want to talk about.
I see my video first, so I guess I'll go. As I said, my son is still young, so I'm still trying to figure out our way around that. Me and my wife has discussed, you know, I forgot what she called it, gentle parenting or something of that nature. And that was something I was against in the beginning, because I'm like, no, you need beatings in the beginning. Well, not beatings, punishments in the beginning, so you can, you know, adjust. And as he gets older, you know, you can lean back. So because he know what's coming.
Right.
If, you know, he's disrespectful. But right now, you know, we're just kind of working on how we can better use our words to correct his actions and showing him actually more than just telling him as well. So if he's, for right now, he's at the stage where he's throwing things down, and like his favorite thing to throw over is a trash can. So we stand there with him and help him pick it up and put the trash back in the trash can, things of that nature. Instead of just automatically, like, you know, punishing him in some kind of crude manner. So,
right. So far we have a few responses here as far as parenting style. I'm seeing apologizing, spoiling the child, disciplining, being a hugger. And I see that's enlarged. So a few people have responded to that. That's very good. Structure, that's very important. Caring, loving, and intentional. I would say I don't have kids yet, but just kind of with my experience, you know, working with children, like when I was in the classroom, there's definitely a need to have balance. You don't want to have a hard hand all the time, because like Nina was saying earlier, you don't want the kids to see you and run away and think that, oh no, this monster is here. You want them to, you know, want to come to you when they have issues, when they have concerns, and at the same time know that they need to respect mom, respect dad, and you know, so it has to be a balance. So thank you all so much for your contributions. So with this video we're going to watch, it's talking about how, you know, growing up, how we were raised to be seen and not heard. So I would love to kind of hear your feedback afterwards.
Ephraim, go and wash the plates.
No.
I must have not heard
you correctly. Hear me the first time.
I said no. Every day you come in asking the same thing. Go and do this. Go and do that. Your mouth is just moving. Foom, 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 foom.
Oh, my mouth is moving.
I'm sick and tired of it.
Okay.
I'm an adult. You need to start treating me like one. This is your house. Go and do it yourself.
Okay. I see. Look at you.
Foolishness.
Dad, can I come back now?
Who are you calling that? In fact, who are you? Have we met? Do I know you? Can you please state your name and age? Absolute nonsense. Don't call this number again.
I had a hard time communicating how I feel. Even in my marriage, sometimes I'll bottle things up. Like, I don't know how to come and say, this is how I'm feeling, or that. I'll just either be quiet or shut down. And I don't want my daughter to go through that. So I'm giving her the tools and the option to be more expressive, talk about her feelings and not feel ashamed of how she feels. And it's going to make change. I know she's not going to go through certain things that I went through. I don't want her. I want the best for her.
Okay. So those two clips, definitely two different responses for them. The first one, you know, you have this child who is talking back to his parents, literally. And then, of course, the dad puts him in his place, like, you know, get out of my house. And then the second one was from one of our previous events. So she was talking about how, you know, growing up, she's kind of being taught how you shouldn't maybe talk or speak up too much for yourself, to the point that it's even affecting her, you know, currently in her marriage. One of you brought this up earlier, how the way we were raised kind of influences the way we respond to people around us and our relationships and everything else like that. So, okay. So let me just kind of go back over here. So, I think for me, I kind of relate to what Yara was saying in a previous video. It still affects me in many ways, because I think for the longest, like up until maybe if maybe 2-3 years ago, it was very hard for me to speak my opinion when it comes to like my elders, if they're saying something that I don't really agree with, because I was, you know, raised in this way, you know, you just kind of listen to whatever they say. You don't really push back or anything. It really affected me, like, in many ways, professionally, you know, socially, my other interactions, everything else like that. So with this question, if y'all can go to the Slido, we're asking, should children be seen and not heard? So we have a few responses, a few different options you can choose. And then also kind of would want to know what you all thought about the video. So Amaka, I'll start with you.
I make it a point to allow my children to speak up. I think, especially my daughters, I have two daughters. I want them to be assertive women. And as time goes on, they'll learn when to and when to be assertive and when to just let things go. However, like I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to set the precedence at the home. Therefore, if there's any corrections, I can teach them now and provide them with the tools and the resources to be able to not feel like they always have to mute themselves or hide their feelings. Because it affected me, too. It really did. Like, as I'm trying to maintain the family name and all this type of thing and not knowing, like, I think my life experiences have made me who I am and have made me more assertive in adulthood than I was growing up, because of the fact that I didn't know when to be assertive and when not to. And I actually didn't even know what the word assertive was at that time, but pretty much what that is being assertive, like letting it be known, like, this is what I'm going to take and what I'm not going to take, and not thinking that tolerated nonsense means strength, which, you know, can tie into other things.
Right.
But I'll be honest, the first video triggered the African in me. Don't talk to me like that. As a child. But the reality is, when in the process of growing up, what is your definition of an appropriate time to express yourself? It's very relative. Mm-hmm. And as a child, you can't really tell. So right now with my kids, I want them to speak whenever. Speak your mind. And as we're going along, as we're growing, as we're going through this process, we will start to teach them when it's right, when it's not right, and, you know, nuances like that. But I feel like if kids have to start to calculate, you know, I have a 9 and a 10-year-old, so I don't have, you know, big kids. I'm sorry, a 9 and a 7.5-year-old, and I don't have big kids. So it's like, how do they calculate when it's appropriate, when it's the right time to speak, especially with everything going on in the world right now with kids? What is appropriate to say? So for me, whenever you're uncomfortable, whenever you have a view, I would like you to express it. And then we'll talk about the appropriateness of it. You know what I mean? But it's very important because, like I said, it definitely affected a lot of us. And I don't like to pick on the women, but specifically women as African women. We had a lot of restrictions on how we express ourselves. Personally, my dad wanted me to be assertive. My dad went to school here, so he had some different views. He always wanted me to speak my mind. But my mom was like, no, this is how women should behave. You shouldn't be so, you know, they were considered aggressive or ill-mannered and all of that, you know. And where do you draw the line, really? When can I actually say my mind?
Too much sense,
right? So, yeah. All right.
Marlon, how about you?
Definitely, I think there's a fine balance. Because of the social emotional learning, you must, there's like a fine balance of allowing students to be able to express themselves healthily, right? And express their feelings and being able to advocate for themselves, right? But I think what happens is that I always say it. I think that our parents think they're more advanced than they really are. And that is always seems to be the case. I think I've heard a lot of key words, harshness, crudeness, simple, you know, approaches, you know, but we have to understand that is the legacy of Africa. We have to understand where, why things are the way they are and the cultural ties to the way they are. Your family name is how your family name in the, you know, in the old days, your family name would be, you know, that would be how you would be taken and, you know, in the community. That's how that was a way of making money. That was a way of, it's not just prestige and this and that. It's like, this was how you survived because you were part of kingdoms, even if we're, you know, and that is, you know, that's part of our heritage. So there's a good balance there to be had. I think that definitely encouraging kids to have that discussion, you know, to be able to communicate openly, to be able to communicate with, you know, context and understanding and be able to make their mistakes and not feel that they will be chastised for it. I think that's very important. I do recognize that many of us would feel, because, you know, people have sharp mouths. It does slice you up. And before you know it, you know, you'll be picking up pieces of your soul from the floor. So it's very, you know, you know, that's the way it is. But inherently, that harshness is because a lot of what we're saying is actually true. And it's so true sometimes that we don't feel that there is a need for niceties because this is your life we're talking about. So if we tell you, how will you go and find a husband if you are, you know, those kind of very rough things that they say. You got the way you are eating. I mean, don't you think it would be difficult? You know, all the kind of rude things that they say is because in the end of the day, it is healthier to be in that less thing. But the problem is how you get there. And the journey means as much. And this is something we have to teach our African mothers and fathers, you know, that the journey is just as important as the result. And I think that's the mistake a lot of our parents make. They're more concerned with the results. And they don't care what kind of journey or how, you know, what the consequences are for pushing and prodding and, you know, and making sure we are going for excellence. We are raised to be excellent. We are the most arrogant Africans in the whole world. We all know. And it's because there is such a thing as Nigerian exceptionalism. And I think that Nigerians need to talk about it like that. So we can also own it a little more and understand why we push our kids. Our kids we're simply always been more creative for centuries. We've been more creative in arts and sciences and things like that. So to automatically feel that, you know, we need to promote that and find ways to get that out, I think is quite important. So anyway, that's where I lay on it. But I think there is a lot of work to be done. Kids have to be given that confidence to speak out, but that doesn't happen very much in military governments. So I'll let that, but I'll let it go.
It all ties in, huh?
Right.
So I do want to pose this question because I know, you know, obviously we have very similar kind of backgrounds. So on this same topic of respect and everything, how big it was for us growing up, everyone that was older than us is automatically your auntie and your uncle. You definitely do not call your elders by their first name without at least putting some kind of, like, I don't know if you want to call it like a honorary title in front of it, or at the very minimum, sir or ma'am. So I think for me, like even now, like seeing people who are like 10, 15 years older than me, it's very awkward. And like, I promise you, like maybe the last couple of years, it took me a while to kind of, especially, like, I guess in a professional setting, when you have someone who's like 60 something years old telling you, oh, call me Tom, you know, call me whatever my first name is. Like, it's weird because we grew up seeing, you know, people who are that age or sometimes even younger. You're like, you give them all these like big titles. So I guess I wanted to ask, I'll start with you, Curtis. Like, what is your opinion of this whole, I guess, auntie and uncle? Is that something that you plan on incorporating, you know, with your child or, you know, in general, like, how do you feel about it? And then we'll just kind of go down from there.
I think for me now, and you know, what I've learned over the years now is it depends on the value of the relationship. So like I have close friends that I would, you know, like they call him his nephew because they, you know, we've been close like that. They call him nephew. So I would expect my son to call them uncle and auntie, you know, depending on if he's comfortable with that, of course, as well. But everybody definitely don't deserve that title. Of course, if you're family, you know, that makes sense. Like I said, close friends that have actually been influential in my life. But just because we make a new friend or a new coworker, you're not going to be required to call you auntie and uncle. But I also think sir and ma'am is appropriate. But it is kind of hard to tell these days because sometimes people are now becoming more offended by those kind of terms due to the, you know, the ongoing changes of gender fluidity. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that for the most part.
Okay. And I do want to remind our panelists and our viewers just to go to the slide. We have another question on the screen about raising respectful children. So while we kind of wait for everyone to participate, Nina, I will ask you to kind of chime in on that same question.
Personally, I'm very big on respect. And again, back to how I was raised. So I'm very big on respect. My kids within the family, they have to have a respectful term in front of their elders, you know, period. And right now that they are at a certain age, they have to have a respectful term in front of elders outside the home. At this point, I'm not really concerned about the topic you just brought up because it's like they're kids. But I think as they grow, they'll make their decision on how they want to refer to people, you know, in the corporate world, because that's a different ball game. I struggled with people way older than me that report to me. And, you know, so I start to say Miss this or, and I just decided to call everybody Mr. and Miss just so I don't, you know, confuse myself. But yeah, personally, I think at a young age, and again, my kids, my youngest is 7.5, my oldest is 9. At this age, they have to put a respectful term in front of their elders. And I guess as we go along this parenting thing, we'll kind of see what happens as they get older, you know? So
that's a very good point. Micah?
I Nina, are you my like spirit mother? Like
Lear.
I don't think I take too much of an issue with the whole auntie uncle thing. Of course, the value of the relationship matters as far as which relationships you'll stress. Like, make sure you call this person auntie. Make sure you call this person uncle. I think I have been hesitant because of the dynamics of the relationships changing as time goes on with allowing my children to even really refer. I'll let them say, oh, hey, how are you doing? Greet them. But I don't think I've made it a point to stress certain titles on certain people just because I know growing up, when relationships changed between our parents and other people, it kind of felt odd. Like, okay, is this person really our auntie and all that? So I quite frankly haven't dived into it too deep because my kids are still young. But this question has brought up something I need to probably think about because they're getting older and I do want them to be respectful, but I do like the auntie uncle concept because it does give the whole concept of the community feeling like a family. And family does have some dysfunction, so that's a part of life. So,
yeah, I'm like, I love that you brought that up because that's something I think about all the time, and I kind of battle with a lot too. Because, you know, again, we grew up, you know, in Charlotte, you know, kind of raised around the same people, so we know. You know, certain people that our parents grew up around. I mean, when our parents came to this country, as you mentioned, family is a really big thing because that's one of the challenges, I guess, that we have, you know, being from, you know, coming from another country and living in another place. All of our, I guess, core family and everyone else is back in our homeland. So when you come to a new country, you have to kind of formulate these relationships or fictive kinships, which is something that we discussed in a previous kind of episode, topic or so. So even now, like when I see some of those elders, like you said, since it's hard for me to say anything other than auntie or uncle. So far we have some responses coming in. Do you get offended when your kids talk back to you? The majority of people are saying yes. And I will say, kind of going back to the auntie and uncle thing, there's like some kids that I work with in church and they're like, you know, much younger. So it's weird when they call me my first name, because like, is again, because they are also, you know, they're coming from African, you know, parents and everything. So it's, I guess for me, it's always trying to reconcile, you know, when we were growing up, I guess we were raised or taught to believe things a different way. So it's always interesting to see how things progress, if you want to call it progression in that way. But I do have to try to sometimes find a balance where, you know, I want them obviously to see me as, you know, someone they can come to. But at the same time, I also myself want to find ways to make sure that, you know, you have to put some level of respect on someone's name. And I'm not trying to say that to be funny, but, you know, there has to be some level of like, yes, I'm not your mate.
Don't call me Nina.
Nina, who am I, your mate?
Right. Yeah, so just trying to reconcile that. That's something that's like a real challenge, I would say, for me. So let's see. So 25% said, let me see. Can't really see it. Oh, Marlon, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to just point out, like, because, you know, sometimes I always say that we Africans, we live the culture, but we don't understand our culture. Mm. And that is because we don't, the reason why this respect and all these things are put into the eye is because back in the days, obviously, the only way, we didn't have any writing. I always say, Black people, how long have we actually been writing? 100 years, 125 years, give or take. Right. So in the end of the day, our natural forms of communication are even higher level art forms and, you know, songs and things like that. So it's like the only this oral tradition, that's how you get information from the top to the bottom. It is, you know, everybody always talks about cultural exchange as if it only happens between different cultures. No, it happens actually within, it's actually more important that it happens within the culture between intergenerationally, right? So that's what we all experience when we come to America, is the fact that because our kids are, there's no way to immerse them naturally in our culture, we have yet to find a way to duplicate that, because without having being in Nigeria itself. So our kids eventually lose their culture. Your grandchildren will not even understand whether there's a place on the planet called Nigeria. You know, that is just how it is. It's not us particular to us. It's Jewish people, every group of immigrant that has come over, Chinese, as they come over, each successive generation gets more Americanized and more whitewashed. And before you know it, you can barely recognize, you know, whether this kid is, you know, it deculturalizes you. So this respect and all these things are even more important in this environment, because we cannot, like, we have a limited amount of time with our children before they leave us. And that time you must spend it discussing with them and sharing and engaging in this cultural exchange. And especially for Nigerians, where we send our kids off at 17, that even gives us a little less time. We, you know, it is important that we take these, you know, opportunities to exchange the culture, not between us, because we almost lost ourselves, but between our parents and our children. That's our job, because what do we know, right? We're still learning and still trying to remember what, you know, and figure things out as well. So that is kind of the, you know, the when you look at it from a top view, that is why culture, we put so much reverence into these old people, because that's where all the knowledge is. Our whole cultural knowledge. If everybody in the today did not know how to cook egusi soup, it would be gone, right? Forever messed up, right? We don't teach the next generation, just gonna be gone. Sit. No egusi soup. What kind of world is that? Take me now, Lord.
You're funny, Marlon. All right. So we'll go to the next slide. So I really want to talk about like this notion of being like the bonus parent. And again, since three of us are the first daughter, particularly coming from Igbo heritage, the Adas, lots of responsibilities are put on us. So, you know, at an early age, literally like very early, I remember I think being seven or so, my, you know, again, kind of going back to that immigrant experience, parents had to work, obviously, you know, so minimum wage kind of jobs, you know, hustling to make sure their kids had, you know, what they needed. But as a result, we kind of missed out on lots of key moments with our parents. So just kind of naturally, we were forced to maybe grow up, maybe in a way that we didn't really, like at seven, you don't need to be the mom of the house, if that makes sense. So I just remember getting in trouble, you know, my siblings would misbehave, kind of being held to that standard of, you know, you should have been watching them. You should have been making sure they're doing the right thing. But it's like, I'm seven. So how am I, you know, going to be doing all these things? So a lot of challenges, you know, as far as that growing up. So I do want to ask you all, do you kind of hold these same expectations for the oldest child, you know, as they grow up? What do you guys kind of think about that? Like, to what extent do you want your oldest child or the oldest children to be watching after the younger ones?
Ooh, can I speak?
Yes.
Because, and Kira knows me, I am the oldest of eight children. I was the, I don't even know if I should say honorable, but I was definitely the third parent. It has made me, I would say, more responsible and more aware. However, because of certain experiences, I don't want my children feeling at such a young age that my responsibility is their responsibility, that my burdens are their burdens. No. I made that choice to have children, so I will try as much as possible to absorb a lot of the shock that comes with the decisions that I make, rather than allowing my oldest child to absorb that shock. And at the same time, I want to try my best to preserve their innocence as far as like being a child and being able to just enjoy childhood. Because now as an adult, even myself, I don't even want to be an adult. No, I don't. I'm like, there's no rush in growing up. So for the fact that I feel like that, I'm like, if I can do anything for my children, I want them to enjoy a life as long as possible. And that as much sense, without any responsibilities. I mean, Well, of course, they have to learn. Honestly, wait, let's take that back. They have to learn responsibility, because in adulthood, you need certain experiences to be a strong adult. However, I want them to just enjoy as much as possible, because that's like the only time in life you're ever under somebody's full protection. You know what I mean? So.
Right. And since I love the fact that you brought that up, because like you said, being that you're the eldest of eight, and I think for many of us too, like I'll speak for myself, like for those of us in the Charlotte area, like you are our big sister. So it's like, I'm pretty sure growing up, your parents probably like made you feel like, you know, you have a lot of people who are looking up to you. So I know that was like a lot of stress, you know, added stress and everything else.
Thank you.
So Nina, I don't know if you have around.
I actually just had this conversation with my husband, and I feel like, first of all, I'm very happy to hear Amaka's version or, you know, personal feedback based on being in that role. I'm not the first child. I'm actually the last. I'm the first girl.
Okay.
So it's interesting hearing that. But the conversation I had with my husband was, we definitely do this. So maybe we should slow down, but the first, my oldest, and then you have to read your kids, their personality, and you have to learn to kind of understand how your actions are affecting them. So my first son takes pride in being the man of the house when my dad is not here, and I'm the man of the house. And so he enjoys making the right decisions when daddy's not there, you know? But then I also realized, and this is a conversation we had, what about the second one? Because now the second one kind of shifts the blame to my oldest son, Shemata. Well, I asked Chiamaka, and he said, and then he's slowly not feeling the need to take responsibility. And so should we really put that on the first son alone, or kind of find a balance where they both have the, I don't know what to say, turns or opportunities to be responsible for your other. So in other words, I'm beginning not to like the older, younger, taking responsibility for your sibling. I like that. Let them both take responsibility for each other.
A partnership.
Thank you. So that's kind of, we literally just had this conversation. It's more so like, let Akachi start to see that he should be responsible for his brother's actions as well. Because if my husband comes home and Akachi does something, he's looking at the older one. But you were here. Why did you let him do that? And then Akachi's at the corner, but you actually did the problem. You know what I mean? And now,
oh my gosh,
the older one is explaining, oh, I did see him, or I told him, you know what I mean? So we had this conversation, but then trickling back again to Amaka's view, yeah, you don't want to put all that pressure on a little child. You know, they're kids at the in the end. So I guess we'll all learn to, you know, about your parenting is at school, you learn as you go. So yes. All learn right. To kind of balance it out. But I definitely think it's important for kids to take some degree of responsibility in their actions. I feel it's very important that they know they're answerable to someone. They know that, you know, there are some things that, you know, my older son would say, I'd rather go to detention than get in daddy's trouble. You know, that kind of thing. So little things like that give them a sense of, you know, just being responsible when they're away from mom and dad. You know what I mean? Because the kids these days are not, it's not our time, and our time, these kids these days are very advanced, very smart, a lot of things that we had no idea, they are really, really way ahead of us. So yeah
Curtis, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both the ladies who just spoke. For me, I was a first child as well. I'm first of four, the oldest of four. So I definitely understand how that parentified child works and how taxing that is. Being the first child and being responsible, it does forces you to grow up faster than you would like. And you'll lose some of that innocence and childhood experience that, you know, many of your peers do have. So I definitely wouldn't want that for my son growing up. You know, whoever comes before him. But I do agree with Nina that they do need some kind of responsibility. So it depends on my intention when I'm teaching him something as far as responsibility. Like, example is, you know, if I'm telling him to, hey, can you go online and pay this bill? Just an example, I'm telling him for him to know it for himself on how to, you know, organize bills and things of that nature and then finances. And I'm teaching him behind that of, you know, gaining that responsibility and, you know, when it's your turn to step into that leadership role, then you're able to do so. And also teaching them how that responsibility looks when me or your mom is not there. If me, your mom is not there, then yes, you are responsible for looking out for your younger sibling in that sense. So, but I think this should only be absent of me and a parent, because you don't want to give your children that confusion of they are, you know, a parent as well. You don't want to put them on that same hierarchy as you. You want to still make sure they understand that we're still your parents above all.
Exactly. And that's actually a perfect segue to kind of the next thing I wanted to ask as it relates to this. So, like, even till today, my mom would, like, she'll call me and be like, hey, you know, did you see what, you know, your sister or your brother did? You need to call them and put it, like, I'm not their parent. So, like, I literally have to tell her, mom, that's literally not my responsibility. I have my own things to do, and I just can't take that on, you know, because that was literally my childhood. Like, my entire childhood was watching after my siblings, you know, like you mentioned earlier, I think it's like just not being able to do certain things just because, you know, you had to essentially come home and be around, you know, for your younger siblings. So I forgot to mention a trigger warning in case anyone is triggered by their childhood, because I definitely am. So just to go to the next question about the differences, I guess, in raising boys versus girls. So again, we invite our viewers and the panelists to go to the Slido Slido.com. The code number is 4554434. We're asking a question of, in the raising of your boys and girls, is there any difference? Are there certain responsibilities that you'll give to one child, over the other, or is it just kind of like the same across the board? So I'll let Curtis, you can just kind of go ahead and tackle that, and then we'll just kind of go down the line.
I only have a boy right now, but I imagine if I have a girl, I will kind of see, it's hard because it's one thing to say, I want to raise them with the same responsibilities, but it's another thing of what the world is going to expect from them. And so that brings a little bit of hesitation of how, I interact with them both. But I want to teach my son the responsibilities, the proper responsibilities for him to grow up to be a man that know how to take care of him and his family. But I also want to teach my daughter those responsibilities for her to know that she can handle her responsibilities without someone, not saying that she shouldn't have somebody, but, or she can't be relying on somebody, but she has to know how to do it for herself before she is able to rely on anybody else, if that makes sense.
It was definitely, I'm a proponent of, I guess, equal, but I do recognize that there is a male and there's a female, and they have certain inherent, viewpoints, and especially like in my work that I do not work with, high school kids. And I realize that I have to do something different to get more men to be involved in my program, because the age group that I'm dealing with, the ladies are simply just way more advanced than the men. If you see the list of long resumes that these ladies are delivering on me, I don't even know what to do. So by the time I look at the men's, I just like, man, if I hire this person, it does look like I'm. So, but I know it's unfair because of during that time, ladies are just more advanced, but the men catch up a little bit later, right? So because of things like that, I definitely realize that gender is very important to take into account when dealing with young people. As we all know, we've all heard the examples of how, a mother will aid a young man's perception of how he deals with women, and vice versa, right? A dad and his daughter's relationship, and how that So these things are, there is a difference, and I believe it, and that's one thing I do like about our feminism in Africa. It does celebrate being a woman. It's not like all subservient. In fact, some of the toughest people some of the toughest people I won't play around with, they're ladies. Oh my goodness. So, it is what it is. So I go with different, but so my son is more, of course, I am more strict with him. My daughter, unfortunately, I was unable to maneuver her, but she gets a little bit more. A little bit of more what my son would say, that I'm spoiling her. Let me just put it like that. But, it is what it is. Thank you.
Nina?
For me, I feel like... So the reason why, personally, I feel like when women, African women, I'll be very specific, kind of thrive when they come into a Western world where they are given all these opportunities, is because growing up, women are thought to be very dynamic. We have to be firm but calm. We have to be strong but soft. We have to know how to take care of a home but don't appear too strong. We from a very young age, women are thought how to, or I don't know that we were taught or forced, or life makes it that way. But a lot of women are very, very dynamic in their thought process and how they have to behave in different scenarios. Boys never had to do that. And I feel like I have two boys, and I feel like that's one of the biggest reasons why you know, like Curtis said, women will tend to thrive because we're more resilient just because of how, and I think it's worldwide, you know, women have gone through these scenarios where we have to adjust and readjust. We're supposed to be these superhumans that can just, you know, transform as needed. I want that for my boys. And that's why I would say this equal. I wouldn't say different, because it is true. The world expects certain things from men and from women. But if we can kind of instill that in both, you know, how will that come out to be? You know what I mean? So for me, I want my boys to learn all those nuances as boys. I haven't been blessed with a girl yet. And with them, I want them to know how to take care of a home. I want them to know how to read emotions. I want them to be emotionally intelligent. I want them to know when and what to say at certain times. Don't be crass and, you know, like, you know, you know.
And boy, like, don't be like a man.
You know, so for me, I want to say give them the same responsibilities, because when you start to divide it, that's where the whole thing comes in. Like, oh, a woman, you know, you're a woman. You should, yeah, you're a man. You should also, you know when to do this and when not to do this. So, I mean, I don't know how it's going to work out, but that is my, you know, that is my parental intention right now, to give them the same steps I would give if I had a daughter.
Well, it's definitely worth the try. Parenting is trial and error. No, I certainly want to raise, I only have two daughters, and they're 5 and 8, and I haven't been blessed with a son yet. However, when I do have a son, I want to raise him as equal as possible. He has to learn how to be domestic as well. I want my ladies to also know things that men know, as far as like handling finances and all that type of stuff. In fact, when I was growing up, my dad fondly calls me his first son, although I have a brother that's younger than me. He calls me his first son because he literally, in fact, I would have conversations about any and everything about with him. He would show me how to change tires. He would show me how to fix things. I knew how to do all the DIY stuff before it became a thing. And I think that makes me more resilient, strong. So why not teach a woman how to do things that are generally known as a man's role? Why not teach my son, when I do have a son, how to cook or how to clean or how to just be domesticated, because that comes handy for themselves when they live alone. That comes handy when they're in a marriage. They now are equipped and not afraid to take care of the baby when the wife is not around. They're not afraid to take care of the home when their wife is not around, because quite frankly, sometimes when you enter into a marriage or you hear other people's relationships, it's not so much that the man doesn't want to help. He's afraid. He doesn't know how. So I want to try to instill these tools and concepts early. Therefore, when they grow up, it comes handy.
If I can just add to that experience, being like I said, the first and oldest male, that is so true, because my wife has experiences with other, you know, wives, and they talk about, oh, you let your husband go shopping, or your husband is cooking, or you let your husband at home with no instructions on how to take care of the baby. And she was like, no, he's fine. He knows what he's doing. And, you know, the other wives are always talking about, like, oh my gosh, so I have to leave all these instructions for my husband, and he doesn't know what to buy when he goes to the store. I have to do all that. So it does come in handy, you know, having those experiences growing up as a boy of how to cook, how to clean, how to take care of a baby, things of that nature. So
I just wanted to add that everything I said is not based off personal experience, because I have zero abilities for male related things. So zero. And it bothered me at some point. Like, My husband knows if the car just stops on the road, I'm taking an Uber. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to touch. The way I was raised, I'm good with nurturing, you know, taking care of the home and things like that. But anything related to fixing, I don't even go near it. I'll just call my brothers and then they will never even expect me to do it. And that's the thing. What is the expectation? There was no expectation from me to learn any of those handy things. So now I'm zero. I don't have any skill whatsoever when it comes to such things. So I envy you, Amaka, and that's what I want for my kids too, where they're not completely unable to do one section of life. Because when I came to America, I didn't have my brothers, I didn't have my dad, you know. So now how do I own a car? I'm calling people, I'm begging friends to come and figure this out, and they are charging me an arm and a leg because I don't know what they're talking about. You know what I mean? So I think it based on my personal experience, I don't want my kids to just have zero knowledge in one aspect of real life, because it is real life.
Well, don't envy me too much, because nowadays we're all about soft life.
You're right.
Your car big called AAA or your insurance company.
Right. I wanted to. Yeah, I think these are, I just love what I'm hearing. I love especially the dynamism that are expected from women. I thought that was a really interesting take. I never quite heard it explained that way. I do want to add that, like, definitely, like, I feel like they're, like, my son can cook probably much better than my daughter, because I can cook. And so the idea is, like, you know, I want to make it very clear that humans, beings need to know how to cook, whether you're a female human or a male human. So I know there are certain things. Cleaning your room is a universal. Hygiene affects women and men the same. So I think that these are some of the things that I want to make sure that they are not different and are expected. But I do also recognize that there are also natural pulls and pulls that I see it. I'm an educator. I work with kids every day. At a certain age, like I said, there are certain age, women are simply just, they are more intuitive. They can feel and absorb, and they just have a knack for it. Now, I'm not saying that every woman or every man cannot have the same level of, you know, whatever on the other side. But just like, I mean, it would just not be as much, right? I mean, it would sway depending on, you know, I guess culture and, but there's also some genetics, I guess, to an extent. But I just feel, because I know, like, for instance, a lot of, you know, men don't have to think of, I always say men don't have to think as hard about things because they can always just punch somebody. And that, it's literally that simple as that, right? You know, men will get emotionally charged up, and before they get to know it, they're ready to, you know, rock and throw blows, right? A woman, no matter what, will look at it and say, okay, let me look at this situation. How can I solve the situation a little better? Not saying, you know, I always say that all the laws that they've made are for men and women, but it's the men that I always miss. You know, so there is a level that we should not just sit by and say, because we want to be PC, that we will now throw millions of years out of intuitiveness and natural abilities and skill sets out the window simply because we're trying to engage in some level of, I believe in equality all the same. You know, we always say in Nigeria, every hand on the, you know what they say, all the fingers on the hand are not the same length, right? So it means that while, even though they all serve the same purpose, not everybody is going to be standing on the same exact standing. So that's what I would come down a little bit on, you know, how, you know, just a little wrap it up. So thank you. And I talked so much.
Yeah, thanks for that, Marlon. So before we go to the next Slido question, because I know, Amaka, you brought this up earlier. I think we all kind of did in our own way. But I just want to talk about, like, how communication wasn't always open for many of us kind of growing up. You know, again, the immigrant experience, because we can all relate to that. I speak for myself, but I know we can all relate. I think between ourselves and our parents, or just elders in general, there wasn't a lot of open communication. For example, if you ask, let's say, your elder, oh, you know, just some kind of question. They'll be looking at you like, why are you asking me that? Like, kind of stay in a child's place kind of thing. So I feel like we grew up not really knowing our parents, if that makes sense. Like, or at least not on a deep level. We just kind of knew them as, okay, these are the I don't want to say like the gods of the home, but these are like the big people. You know, we're just the little people that we do what they say. And that's just kind of how life works. So I just feel like, you know, we didn't have like a really welcoming maybe environment sometimes to have certain conversations. So I do want to know, like, now, like, now that, you know, of course we're adults and everything, and, you know, for those of you who have kids, like, how would you say your relationship is more maybe open now, and like maybe some conversation you have with your parents now that you didn't have growing up? Like, if you can just kind of speak a little bit more about how the communication has changed and maybe what you plan on doing with your own kids as it relates to communicating in a more open way.
Me? Okay. So I had a very open communication with my boys. They tell me everything. And I know I've had this question has come up a few times. You know, would you push them towards what you want based on what you know about them or what they have communicated to you? Or would you allow them forge their path? And that's a question I struggle with, because I feel like kids don't know. They don't know what's best for them. And I understand how everyone might say, you know, let them make their decisions, let them, you know, fail and get up and, you know, do it better the next time. But for me, I feel like if I can nudge them towards the right, you know, direction, or, you know, I remember when my older one, when he was younger, he said he wanted to be a police officer. And I to me, I already said, okay, he likes to protect people. You know, he doesn't like, you know, crime. You know, he wants to see the world at peace. You know, I'll probably push him towards that career path. I don't know if I want him, you know, on the battle line with guns and stuff like that. So I might push him away from that. This is just an example. So communicating with them kind of opens up that window to kind of see them, see what they love, see, you know, their true selves and how you can better direct them in life in general. And no, not force them, but just give them a nudge towards what you think based on our experiences as parents.
Yeah, this is a great question. So I think I was talking to my cousin the other day about this, and we talk about how we kind of get confused on when adulthood started for us, because it's like, okay, one day it just clicks, like your parent or your aunt are talking to you in a certain manner, and then you're just like, wait, I can talk back. I can say, wait, hold up now. Like, I actually did this. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get the strength and the dignity back, you start being able to be more responsive to, you know, things they're saying, to say, no, actually, I don't think that's right. And you start setting those boundaries. Now, I'm not saying that's easy, because when those things start building those boundaries, they become a little, I guess, aggressive in a way, because they're not used to you speaking up for yourself. So, but you know, being a young adult now, I have to continue to stand up for yourself and continue to restate those boundaries, because that's what helps you make actually feel better. You feel more mature, and you see that, you know, it is impacting you in a certain way when you aren't able to respond. So if somebody's talking down to you, whether, you know, auntie, uncle, parent or not, it's not going to make you feel good. So now you're looking at, like, what is it costing me to letting them speak to me the way they're wanting to, and me not being responsive. So I'm starting to think about that more, not just for me, but my family, because I want to be able to make sure that if I'm going to tolerate this for myself, that means I'm going to tolerate from somebody speaking like this to my wife or my child. And I'm not. So it starts with me speaking up for myself and doing what's right. What I think for myself is first.
Okay, so the communication with my children is pretty open, and that's because my dad and I had a very open communication line. Like he, like I mentioned earlier, we talked about every and anything. I think when I remember at the age of 8 or 9, my dad is talking to me about puberty. And I had very comfortable, at first it was kind of uncomfortable. However, as I got used to it, I was very comfortable in going to my dad to discuss anything with respect. To never talk to him about like boys, like that type of stuff. However, he still, you know, gave me some tools and resources in regards to basically handling that situation. Whereas with my mother, it affected my relationship with her because she didn't really, it wasn't really easy to talk to her about stuff. And that's probably because she didn't really have certain life experiences or probably that type of communication line with her mother. So thankfully, I do believe that God sends you angels on earth. And one of those angels is my my childhood best friend's mom, who filled in that gap that my mother wasn't able to feel in my, especially in my teenage years. She was the one that I could talk to about boys, just about that aspect of things that a lot of parents don't really talk about. So that makes me want to have that open line of communication with my parents, I mean, with my children. And I also noticed in school, in the aspect of like, let's say dating, when you get in high school and all that type of stuff, I did notice that children or teens that did have that open line of communication with their parents, they knew how to handle dating better than those that didn't. They knew like, you know, what the difference between men and the difference between, you know, women that were like gold diggers from a guy's standpoint, or like that were preying on them. And then they knew the difference between like a man that's trying to take advantage of you because you're naive and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, I want to have open lines of communication with my children.
That was extremely powerful, Amaka. Thank you for sharing that. Nina, do you have a comment before we go to the next section?
No. My spirit, mama.
You're to find you because it's important. You know, a lot of times, in fact, this panel discussion has made me realize that I might be a little rigid. I might be still very African in my ways. And, you know, it's also a learning opportunity for me as well, you know, to kind of step back and start to apply more of the more flexible parenting. You know, I want to say that I have a very open communication with my boys because I did have that as I grew up with when I was younger, not so much. My mom was very strict and unapproachable. But when I got into puberty, she started to want to have those conversations. So I was lucky to have that later in life with my mom. But, you know, how about it starts earlier? How about I have that with her right from the get-go? You know, there might have been a lot of things that I did or that I didn't know that I would have known, you know? So, yeah, definitely open communication with kids is very important. My boys, even when I'm mad at them or when I'm being firm or about to ground them, they still tell me. They'll still say, okay, mommy, I know this is, you know, this is what I get to do because I did this, but I want to let you know why I did it. They're still very vocal and still want to express why it was done. And that way I'm able to calm down. I'm able to say, okay, well, you know, there are consequences, but I understand why you did this. And it really just helps with just that flow. So when you're done with your grounded or your grounding, we're not enemies, you know, we both understand why and all of that. So
I think for most of us, we had to kind of grow up and see that our parents, you know, as you all have mentioned, they, you know, they were still kind of adapting to this new environment. You know, again, immigrant background, everything else like that. A new culture, adapting to, you know, different things they were seeing, trying to balance, you know, multiple children, because obviously many of us come from homes where there's lots of kids. That's just like the norm for us growing up. But I think now that we're adults, it's always nice to see how those relationships evolve. Cause like now my mom is like one of my best friends. Like I mentioned earlier, she calls me for everything, you know, tells me everything, like even things I don't want to hear. So it's like the dynamics of the relationship change as you grow older, because now they see you as an equal, if you want to call it that. I mean, of course, they're still going to see you as a child first, but they're able to kind of look at you in a way that, you know, I did well with my kid. My kid is a grown up now, and now I can have that meaningful relationship. And I think for us too, we can also, maybe the relationship we didn't have growing up, we're able to kind of foster it now that we're adults with our parents. So that kind of switches over perfectly to this question. What do you value most about your parents or elders now that you're an adult, with your own children or just in general? And is there anything you would like to say to your parents? Like, what would just one thing that you value the most about maybe your upbringing, and then how you're passing that on, you know, with your son now, and maybe one word for your parents that you would like to tell them?
So I grew up with my mom. So I was a single mother household for me. I knew my father. He was, I still talk to him to this day, but I just didn't live with him, due to their parental differences and relationship differences. So I guess with that experience for me, my experience of my mom was really built on, you know, working and providing, and, you know, which left limited time for us and things of that nature. So I guess from that relationship and that understanding, it put me more in tune of how important time is now with my children. My son for now, right now, but hopefully children in the future. You know, how going to those basketball games or spending time with actually to teach him something, or, you know, doing things that he's interested in, how important that is. And because they don't see you working, they don't see the money, they don't see the value of those things. They see when you're there for them. So I remember watching an interview by Toby Nyungwe, if y'all know, he's up and coming rapper, and he talked about you can fake it like you care, but you can't fake it like you're there. So I want to make sure that I'm there for my son and not just saying that I have to provide, I have to go out and work. I want to make sure I'm there. So, I mean, one word for my parents is that I guess I value your time more than your money. So,
Definitely resilience. They, in as much as we might sometimes think they were too harsh, you know, or they helped us to be strong, you know, maybe stronger than we needed to be sometimes, but but I want to say that it helped me greatly when I came here, because it's very hard to break an African immigrant, you know, because we're what your parents are already going to say, like, does that person have two heads? You know, those kind of things. And it's funny to hear, but in our head somewhere, we take that and it's like, yeah, I can push. I can keep regardless of the obstacles. And so for me, even though, you know, there are tweaks here and there that I feel that I can apply to my kids to hopefully make it better. But I feel like that firmness, that push is really the foundation of, you know, anything I've overcome, you know, when I had to be away from them and stand on my own. So for me, definitely resilience.
I told you my spirit mama right here. That is what I was going to say. Similarly, resilience. I value their unbreakable spirit. I don't even think they knew that they were wrong. I don't think they did. No, but I really appreciate the sacrifices that my parents made, especially now that I am an adult. And just to imagine that they left the country without their parents and without any true guidance day to day, and having to just rely on what they knew. And a lot of times what they knew wasn't always the best. However, they didn't really have parents that had, I guess, were able to unpack what was good and what wasn't good in their own training. Those conversations didn't come up. So how do you correct something that you haven't identified is wrong, right? So I do extend a lot of grace to my parents, and I appreciate just keeping me alive and keeping my siblings alive. And there's eight of us, not in a foreign country. That the type of sacrifices that they made, the type of money that was spent, the type of oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yet they are, it's really how you carry your burdens, right? And that's one thing I did learn from them. If you perceive your burdens as heavy, they will feel heavy and they will look heavy on you. If you perceive it as in like, you know what, I just have to do what I have to do, then you will look like you're not carrying anything. And Kira knows my parents, and I will say that I'm blessed to have them. I'm blessed to see them stand tall and strong, and thank God that we're all doing relatively well considering all factors. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Marlon, what about you?
I guess the older you get, the more valuable you really start to, closer you get to the older people, you start valuing, oh yes, I know something, I'm worth something. You know, one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard is that, guess what? Your soul never feels old. Isn't that a beautiful feeling? That doesn't matter if you're 7 years old, you're not gonna feel any different than what you felt when you were 15 years old. Now the body may be feeling different. But the soul will stay beautiful and will stay hopeful and will stay thriving until its last moment on this earth. So I think the inspiration, that's, you know, knowing where, you know, going up the stations of life and, you know, all of a sudden seeing that the rules are not reversed and you're the one, you know, being the strict and stringent one, you're the one in a position where the last time you heard that conversation, it was being said and you were on the other side and, oh my goodness, that's what they meant, you know? And I think with every revelation that we get as we grow older, the more we begin to appreciate our parents, understand the sacrifice, and, you know, I guess, you know, stay more motivated to even do, you know, pay it forward to our children, right? So that they can have a much better life than we had. Everybody, I agree with what everybody has said. And, you know, I'm very thankful everybody has been here. I'm also thankful everybody has been learning. You know, Afro-American Academy, once you get in touch with us, you're going to learn something from that, you know, everybody has really been, you know, doing a lot on it.
I do want to add to that, which, you know, just everyone has been saying pretty much the same thing. You know, again, just that immigrant experience, there were just so many challenges that our parents faced. Obviously, some we may never know because, you know, we had the privilege of being brought up or growing up in this kind of environment. So we didn't see things in a way that they saw it or experienced it. So definitely that resilience, that pride in, you know, who you are as a people. You know, again, Tamaka knows this, like going to those functions, you know, seeing and learning about your cultural heritage. It was like not being in the village, but it kind of gave you that feeling of growing up back home, you know, as close as they could make it, you know, being able to see, you know, different parts of your culture, like, you know, to see like masquerades and, you know, the breaking of like, so many things that we were taught in a special way, like outside of the home and the kind of community center kind of gathering with other people within the community. So yeah, just, you know, I would say that resilience is definitely one big one, you know, coming from that kind of background, having to, you know, sacrifice so much being away from your family, like one of you have mentioned. So, you know, definitely appreciate them for all they did for us. And, you know, obviously we're still alive. So, but I will say one thing that, you know, jokes aside, you know, as I was kind of looking up some material, like with some of the different people, I know like one thing that we like to do is make fun of, you know, our parents and make fun of the things they say, how they say things and how they kind of respond to different things when we were growing up. So in as much as like we laugh at those things and sometimes they can be kind of harmful, like watching those videos and seeing them say certain things, like, you know, in a way it kind of built us, you know, built character to some extent. I'm not saying that's the best approach, obviously, but, you know, that's what they knew to do. And it's up to us at this point in our lives to kind of figure out what things we can continue on with and what things we can just kind of push to the side as it relates to raising the next generation. So so see love and faith, appreciation, sacrifice, so many great things on here. Hey, Bat family. Thank you so much once again for tuning in to today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed our conversation today. I would love to know your thoughts and any feedback that you may have on this particular episode, this particular topic. Please feel free to leave us a voice message, or you can comment on our promo image. You can find us on our Instagram at Building Africa's Future. Please go to the links in the bio to find out about how you can purchase our new merchandise. We do have new shirts available for $25 all the way up to $30. We would love for your continued support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And as usual, I hope that you stay well. Thanks, Bat Family.